let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. I've grown accustomed to my fat poems about people, places, and puzzles by T.C. Hood. Contains poems about places, problems, and people that he has encountered over his 70-plus years of life. There are reflections on relationships and struggles, as well as on the natural and built-in environment where we live. Tom Hood, Ph.D., is a professor emeritus of sociology, a distinguished teaching career including a number of years as head of the Department of Sociology at the University of Tennessee. He served on many department, college, and university committees, including president of the University Senate. An active researcher, Dr. Hood's funded research projects and activities in the areas of transportation and the environment have brought over $3 million in external funding to the university. His published research on the Billy Graham Crusade in Knoxville and his work on the social psychology of experiments has been reprinted and widely circulated. A committed Christian, long active in the church, as well as a 4-H leader for over 40 years, Dr. T.C. Hood, author of I've Grown Accustomed to My Fat, Poems About People, Places, and Puzzles, is our guest on This Week in America. Dr. Hood, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
So glad much to talk here. About. I love the title of the book, and I love the fact that with the amazing career that you've had, I love someone who obviously enjoys observations, watching people, and telling those recollections. Do you enjoy sharing your observations on American life with your friends and relatives?
Of course. It really is great. And I'm a regular reader of The Economist, which has wonderful things in it, as well as the New York Review of Books.
Yes. So you stay up on all of that. I'm fascinated by that. And so many of these observations come into play in Dr. Hood's book. T.C. Hood is the author. That's the name you'll find if you're Googling it. I've grown accustomed to my fat poems about people, places, and puzzles. It's interesting, the career that you've had. Do you believe that we experience life as it constantly growing, constantly changing as we go through these different phases of our lives?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, a book I'm reading now is a book by Jacob Tobiah called Sissy. And he calls it becoming a gender. And essentially what he does is he takes the idea of gender, which has resulted in all kinds of things in memoirs. But this particular memoir is unusual for a person writing under the age of 30. He's just turning 30 this year. I guess he's made the Forbes, according to the jacket, he's made the Forbes list of notable people under the age of 30. But what the thesis of the book is that he has come to realize his gender over the period of time from when he was little up to the current day. And so that's a very, very interesting kind of thing. I do believe that life is one of those kinds of things where you are constantly revising and making a new assessment of just who you are. And to some extent, that's reflected in this book, I've Grown Accustomed to My Fat.
You know, it's interesting observing for college students, young people in their formative years for so many years. And it's interesting, the book that you talk about, the article you talk about, how has the meaning of gender and sexuality changed during the course of your life? We've had a number of conversations over a couple of the past several generations. How's it changed in your life?
Well, I first started researching gender when I encountered an organization formed by Virginia Prince, or Charles, a.k.a. Charles, Virginia Prince, a chemist in California back in the 1960s, I think they were originally a thing. And the fascinating thing about it, to me was I discovered that he'd named the organization the Society for the Second Self. Well, I already had encountered in my sociology reading and my specialty within social psychology, particularly at that time, was in the area of social psychology. And I'd encountered the work of George Herbert Mead and Charles Horton Cooley. Charles Horton Cooley, the originator of the phrase, the looking glass self, who says essentially, you know, we recognize who we are by looking at our reflection back to us from other people. And George Herbert Mead, in his concept of the significant other, says, you know, well, we know who we are by the feedback from people that we believe understand us to some extent. So both George Herbert Mead, a well-recognized scholar back in the beginning of, in the early years of the last century, and Charles Horton Cooley, about the same time, perhaps a little bit later, came up with that. And I encountered this book called The Society for the Second Self and started looking at people who were doing it. But at that time, people were very reluctant to express such ideas as, you know, I would really like to feel express my feminine side at some times.
Yes.
Sometimes. Whereas now, if you look on the internet, you find all kinds of opportunities to do that in a variety of different ways, websites or places where people actually think, and even some sites that have said recently, well, look, I formed this site because I know there are a lot of people out there that like to do this. They like to dress up in women's clothes, and they're afraid to express that. And, well, it was really very much afraid to express that 30 or 40 years ago. And now, you know, starting a few years ago, the services said, no, we're happy to have transgender people. Okay, so there was a hiccup when Trump was in office, but I noticed that Biden has reestablished the right for people who yes. are transgender in orientation to express that openly. So, I've seen a lot of change in the expression of the open expression of gender identity over the, you know, the 30 or 40 years that I've looked at it.
It's interesting, from suppression to embracing it, just one of the many changes that that we've seen, written about, observations on American life by T.C. Hood, our guest on the program. His book is I've Grown Accustomed to My Fat, Poems About People, Places, and Puzzles. Boy, a lot is going on in terms of the country and democracy and the maintenance of democracy. How has that developed in America? Where do you see us now, and where do you see us going, and where we've come from just maybe even a few years ago?
Well, I'll tell you what. My brother, whom I speak with fairly regularly, I give him a subscription to The Economist, and he gives me a subscription to the New York Review of Books.
Makes it nice, yes, that's fair.
About every week, we get on the phone and we talk to each other about things that we're reading and things that we're thinking. One of the books that he called my attention to recently was Eric Foner's book, The Second Founding, which is about the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution, which were passed right after the Civil War to institutionalize the abolition of slavery, and to make blacks citizens, full citizens of the United States, which of course created a reaction across the South of Jim Crow laws and legislation and poll taxes and almost anything that the states could do to disrupt black rights,
yes,
kind of. And what I have seen over the course of my life, because, you know, I mean, I grew up, did my undergraduate work in the 1960s. At the time, you know, that even the Methodist Church was starting to say, hey, you know what? They've ended school segregation. You know, we've got this creature within the Methodist Church called the central jurisdiction. Well, see, back at the time of the, right after the Civil War, the Methodist Church split into the Methodist Church, the Methodist Episcopal Church, and the Methodist Episcopal Church South. And they split over the fact that by marriage, one of the current bishops had acquired a slave. And they said, well, you can't continue to be a bishop and be a slaveholder. And they had quite a row about it in the late 1800s, and eventually it led to a split in the church, which was not healed until 1938, wow. At which time they said, well, yeah, okay, well, we've got a lot of black congregations now. What are we going to do them now that we're coming back together? And they said, well, let's put them all in a separate category. We won't put them in the same geographic category. We'll create a thing called the central jurisdiction. And the central jurisdiction will embody all the black churches across the United States. Well, the other jurisdictions were strictly geographical. So the southeastern jurisdiction, the western jurisdiction, the north central jurisdiction, etc., northeastern jurisdiction. Those were all, but they put all the black churches into the central jurisdiction. So here was the Methodist Church, which supposedly didn't believe in racial segregation anymore. I mean, after all, hadn't the country said we should eliminate it in our schools with Brown versus the Board of Education?
Yes.
Yes, they had. But here it was. So, finally, the Methodist Church got around to voting to eliminate the central jurisdiction. They get traditionally, they meet in general conference every 4 years. And they said, well, we'll give you until 1968. But in 1968, you're going to have to find a place for those bishops to be over some white churches. And so sure enough. By that time, of course, I was teaching at the University of Tennessee and Holston Conference, which is a geographical conference that embodies Eastern Tennessee, Southwest Virginia, and a few churches in Georgia. We got a black bishop. Needless to say, of course, there were some people who were quite uncomfortable with that at that time. But they said, hey, you know, the church has decided to do that and what have you. So I have seen progress in race relations over the course of my life. But I have also seen a lot of pushing and hauling. I can remember, you know, when one of the Georgia governors, who is a former restaurant owner, you know, when the some of the Civil Rights Act passed in the 1960s, and they said, you know, you can't have segregated restaurants anymore. He said, boy, I don't know if I agree with that. I'm getting out my axe handle.
Yep. Remember anyway, that. Yes, remember that. You've really seen some changes, haven't you?
Oh, my goodness. I have. And then this summer, you know, you see
these things and you think, well, why are we having the Black Lives Matter? Because we've still got problems. We still have to do it. I mean, even though I grew up in the North, and even though we had plenty of people in our neighborhood who were property owners and who were black and what have you, a black farmer who was also, I think he also worked for the state patrol at that time, but had a farm in our neighborhood. Even though I grew up there, I did not realize until some time later that barbershops in my little corner of Michigan where I grew up were still such that if you were black, you went into the barbershop and they might say to you, you know what, we just don't know how to cut your hair.
Amazing.
And as a consequence, one of the people that worked for us, who happened to be African-American, my dad said, hey, Tom, let's go over to Howard Goins and get our hair cut. He'll only charge us a dollar, and he's got a barber chair in his basement. Well, it wasn't until I read Jim Wallace's book, Racism, America's Original Sin, where he pointed out that that kind of thing, that I suddenly realized that Mr. Goins had a barber chair in his basement because he had a consistent clientele of people coming to him asking for a haircut.
Interesting. Boy, it's there's so many observations that you'll find in Dr. Hood's book, T.C. Hood, the book I've grown accustomed to my fat poems about people, places, and puzzles. Time is going by so quickly. Where's the best place? I'll send people to Amazon. Where's the best place to go to get information on the book and to order the book?
Well, Amazon stocks it all the time. And, if you wanted to order one from me, you could even take that address on the back of the book and send me a note at P.O. Box 9756, Knoxville, Tennessee, 37940. And you could do that, or Amazon will offer you it in electronic format. And I think it may be available on Barnes & Noble as well.
That's perfect. And we'll have the Amazon, all the information that people can go find it on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. A couple minutes left. There's so much going on, as I alluded to before, in the news. What does the future hold for American democracy? I mean, there are people now talking openly and seriously about the fact that we could face another civil war. Where are we as a country?
You know what? I really think that it's absolutely incredible that Merrick Garland got accepted, and they haven't had the vote yet, but he's gotten through committee.
Attorney General.
Yeah. And Merrick Garland, actually, if you read the news stories, you'll find out that he was one of the people that worked on the Oklahoma City bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City.
Yes.
And I think that Merrick will take on the insurrection that took place on January 6th. And I think that he will pursue that throughout his time as Attorney General. And I'm hoping that it will I know it will drive underground to some extent, but I'm hoping that he will bring to prosecution a number of the groups who obviously made that an organized event rather than something very spontaneous.
Yes, it's going to be interesting to see how that all unfolds. And I'd forgotten his role in the Oklahoma City bombing. I mean, he was right there. He's seen the impact, the devastation that causes. And it will be interesting to see how this plays out for the next 4 years. Boy, the time has gone by so quickly. The book is such an interesting read. One book review, a debut volume of poetry, embraces aging while mining memories for universal truths. And that really is the case. Tell me about the title here in the few seconds we have left. It captures your attention. I've grown accustomed to my fat. How did you come up with this title?
Well, you know what? My sister, Mary and I,
are actually Mary's about 10 years younger. And we were talking one time, and we started just fooling around. Her background is in music, and we we started playing with little verses. And so Mary and I came up with it. And in one version of the manuscript, you know, I shared it with a friend, actually a doctor who's a member of our church, and he said, you know, of the things in the, you know, you really should call that book by the title of that poem, because it's such a catching, it's a catchy title.
Well, it really is. I've grown accustomed to my fat poems about people, places, and puzzles by T.C. Hood. 30 seconds left here. What are you working on now? Your mind is active. I can see it going in all these great directions and all the influence. You know, your career, you've got so much to offer in terms of thought-provoking to get us to think over these issues and discuss some of these issues openly. What are you working on now?
Well, I am working on a book with the title Assurance, and I played around a lot with what the sections of the book should be. And I've decided that on the basis of the poems that I've collected over the years, that I've got three themes that I can use that kind of fall under assurance that are familiar to anybody that's read the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, namely faith, hope, and love. And so I'm going to have a section on each of those. And the poem I'm working on right now goes into the hope section, and it's a kind of a reflection on the different ways in which I have had my hair cut over the years, because, you know, my first haircuts came from my uncle, who was a self-taught barber. My mom came from a family of 10, five boys and five girls, and many of them lived up in the southwest Michigan area where I lived. And my uncle was, you know, I can still remember sitting out on our, what we called the stoop, so to speak.
Oh, yes.
A little...
Yes.
Cement pad just outside the door, and he put me on the top of a bucket and maybe put an apron around my neck just to keep the hair off my neck. And I can still remember the feel of those hand clippers that he used to clip the hairs on the back of my neck as he finished the haircut. You know, those little feel hand-operated clippers. I don't know if you ever encountered
I could feel those as you were describing those, so I know exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about. Boy, I'm looking forward to having you back on the program to talk about that. There are so many memories, so many things that you bring up, poems about places, problems, people you've encountered over your 70-plus years, and what an amazing career and life that you've had, and sharing that in your book, I've Grown Accustomed to My Fat. T.C. Hood has been our guest on the program. Information, of course, on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Dr. Hood, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Enjoyed it so much. Hopefully we can do this again. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Well, I hope we can do it again, too, maybe after I get this book done on assurance.
I would love to have it have a chance to read it and to talk about it. And again, this book's now available at Amazon. Book, I've Grown Accustomed to My Fat, information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.